Welcome back into the Lads Talking Footy podcast. It's me, Jordan Tana, here with Sam Whitaker and Simon Anderson. And boys, I think you need to take something from me. I think I need to give you guys this. Here's my passport.
Yeah, you don't.
Here's my birth certificate.
That. Thank you very much.
I renounce my New Zealand citizenship an absolutely terrible call picking Ireland over the All Blacks. So. Yeah. I can't. Yeah, you didn't even see it. It was meant to be a joke. Oh, it just said I am 12 on it.
Shout out, little
benchwarmers. Yeah, little benchwarmers reference.
Oh, well, I'll rip the passport now.
Oh, no, please don't do that. Just twink out New Zealand and put Ireland, and then a poo emoji next to it.
It's Jordan or Tana.
Jordan.
So yeah, we'll get to that later on when we start featuring the game, but. Yeah, disappointing, Jordan.
Yeah,
disappointing call on that one.
Yeah, always bet on black.
Yeah, always bet on black.
Clearly.
Talking about the league, though, we'll kick it off with that. So the Kangaroos, they had a good win over Samoa on the weekend, just for a few of the best bets that had come through. I had any two of Edwards, Hamiso, and Brian To'o to score a try in the first half. The Hammer, he was greedy and scored two of them himself. Yeah. But they didn't come in, so that was at $5.50, and we went down there. I had Australia to win by 21-30, and that was at $3.40, so that came in. And nice. Anytime try score, I had Liam Martin, and at $3.20, and that went down there, unfortunately. Do you guys have your ones?
Yeah, I just had the Australia to cover the -21.5-point line, which they did late in the game, so thank you, Australia.
No, I had no best bet for that one.
Yeah, you did. Oh, you had 21-30.
Oh, right.
As well.
We held hands
on that one.
Yeah, I didn't have it on my notes.
But cashed it in. So New Zealand A, they take on Tonga A this Saturday at 1:30 p.m., which is going to be interesting to see. As soon as I saw a Tonga A side as well, it's good to see that they've got enough depth to be pulling that together.
Well, if you see
how
stacked their top team is,
exactly,
you'd expect them to have some depth.
So Fiji, they also take on the Cook Islands on Sunday at 6 p.m. They've got an absolute razzle-dazzle side lined up for them. We've got Sunia Taruva, he's in the centres. Dream Buller's getting the fullback spot as well. And you've got Sevo and all of them on the wing. So highlight footy there. And England, they take on Tonga Monday morning at 2:30 a.m., which is a doozy. But we'll just get a quick preview on that one before we discuss the Kiwis. Like you said, Tonga's squad, absolutely stacked.
Yeah.
England, though, they made some waves in the World Cup, so it'll be interesting to see how they approach this in the Pacific Cup, which will be... they aren't actually in the Pacific Cup. They're in the Pacific Bowl.
Tonga and England are just in a test series with each other. Three test series.
There we go. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes up, but... Look, I can't shy away from Tonga and the physicality that they're going to bring in that match as well. So that's where I'd be putting my money.
Yeah, so I can give you guys some quick odds on that. England are the favourites, $1.50. Tonga are the underdogs, $2.62, with the line sitting at +5.5. And yeah, Tonga are stacked, man. Mm. If you look at the forwards they have in their roster, they got Kafusi, they got Kalomaitangi, Ola Kawatu, Aiden Funua-Blake, Fotuaika, bro. Like, their forward pack is completely stacked. Their bench is going to come on and cause havoc as well. So look for the Tongan forwards to make an absolute impact here. They're still a little bit sketchy with the halves, and I would trust England, based on last year in the World Cup, to have a better, more structured team, because they were playing some fantastic footy up until they came up against a Samoan team looking for a good dose of revenge and with a strong squad themselves. So
yeah,
I think England is actually going to win this first test. I've got England winning 1-12 at $2.50, but I don't think they're going to win the series. I think Tonga is going to build and take those last two games.
Yeah, I'm just had to look up 365 because, you know, TAB, they don't have it on their odds.
Oh yeah, no, they don't.
So yeah, I can't see. I'm not much of a man around 365. I would probably say England get this one done pretty close. It'd be a real brutal affair.
Yeah,
lots of forward hit ups. I would say 1-12 England.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Think of the edges. One edge you got Kafusi and one edge you got Ola Kawatu, bro. That's just asking for trouble, asking for hits.
Asking for shoulder strapping and the pads. So the Kiwis, they take on Samoa at 6 p.m. This weekend at Eden Park. So absolutely stacked Kiwis team. They got CNK, Mulatalo, Asako, Timoko, and Manu. That's your back five. We've got Brown and Hughes in the halves, partnered with Brown at hooker. We've got Tapani, Nakora, Ice Papa, Fisher Harris, and Leota up front. Kieran Foran, he's warming the bench at 14 for them as well. And Samoa, they're pretty much unchanged as well. So what are you guys thinking? Home, that first one for the Kiwis, and it's not going to be that Mount Smart Samoan feel that they might have got. It's going to be at Eden Park, so it'll be interesting to see those black jerseys to blue jerseys.
Yeah, and it might be a bit more of a New Zealand presence as opposed to Mount Smart, where we know how much the island support goes to that stadium and it absolutely gets a sea of blue or a sea of red depending on who's playing out of Tonga and Samoa. Yeah. But I think it'll be a bit more even in this one. I do think that our team is pretty stacked. Mm. The only question mark I do have is around the hooker position.
Yeah.
But if you look at that back line, our halves are solid. Yeah. Our back five is outstanding. Our forward pack is solid, fit players as well.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed with this Kiwis team. They could...
And in form, sorry to cut you off as well. You've got guys coming in off Dally M seasons as well, especially in Osaka. You've got CNK, who's just had a breakout season. And it lets Manu move back into that centre role as well. And it's going to be fantastic to watch.
Not to look too far ahead, but this is definitely a squad that could push the Aussies all the way. Like, this is a very strong team. Strongest team we've had in a little bit. I can give you some quick odds on this game. New Zealand are strong favourites here at $1.12, and Samoa are the underdogs at $6, with the line sitting at +16.5. Samoa, they got handily beaten. They gave up too many points early against Australia, but they actually looked all right. They had quite a fair bit of territory and possession in the second half. They just couldn't get over that line. And then every time Australia had an opportunity, they would get over the line in pretty easy fashion with either Tino or Payne Haas or a forward. Like, not the ways you want to see them scoring tries. But they are pretty good. I was super impressed by that fullback, the Storm guy, Saluva Tfa'alongu.
Yeah.
Excellent footwork and speed. Safe as under the high ball as well. He's going to be a factor in this game. I could see them doing a little bit better because they've had that extra game than they did last week. But I still see Kiwis winning this. I've got them 11-20 at $3.50.
Nice. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Fa'alongu had a great season. Great hit out. And the commentators were bigging him up as well massively. So, yeah, safe hands on some real contested high balls. And on attack as well, he was injecting himself. And you could see he was really trying to push the attack. So, yeah, he'll be good again. And the forwards as well, like they come against a real solid Aussie forward pack. And we've got a pretty good forward pack as well. But I think it'll be a much more even battle because I saw that the Payne Haases and stuff in the Aussie team were just making a lot of meters.
Yeah. Tino was just bullying as
exactly.
Well.
So, I mean, we've got a decent fullback, but I see a more even matchup, but that back line is just so stacked. Yeah. I'm picking Dylan Brown has a good game. I did have to do some research, and is Wikipedia wrong, but is this Farmanu Brown got from the Super League and overseas?
Sure. I'm not up to date with
No,
because he was a Cowboys player, or am I thinking of someone else?
Because Wikipedia says he plays for Hull. So.
Okay. Maybe.
But never know. But yeah, so that, like I said, like you said, JT, that's my only question mark is how he plays because we haven't seen him. But yeah, Dylan Brown will link up with Manu, with who's the other one in the centre? Sorry, it's
Tomoko.
Yeah, it'll be good to see him.
He's been your favourite player throughout the season.
Yeah, exactly. He has indeed. I reckon he'll get over. To give you a score prediction, I'm going to say we go out in a blinder, 32-10. So $4 for 21-30 or -20.5 points at $2.30 if you want a point start.
Nice. I'm a sucker for a bet, so I got three here. Asako, Molotalo, and To'o. That's all to score. That's been boosted by the TAB up to $7, which is real tasty in that. Osaka to score 16 plus points in this one at $2.75. I really like that.
Yep.
He's going to be kicking goals for them as well, and he might dot down one or two himself. And I've done a little same game multi of Tomoko, Osaka, and the Cora, all anytime try scorer, and the Kiwis by 11.5 at $10. So
it's cover 11.5?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Nice.
So that's where I'm going there. Moving on to the NPC final. So Taranaki, they defeated Canterbury 23-16, and Hawke's Bay, they defeated Wellington by 25-25. Sorry, I've misdone the score on this one, but they defeated
25-24.
It was 25-24.
Yeah, they scored two late tries, but that game was already done.
Exactly. So I had Taranaki 1-12 at $3.30, so I went in there, and I had Wellington at 11-20 at $3.70, but this weekend, we have Taranaki taking on Hawke's Bay at Yarra Stadium in New Plymouth. I'm going to flip it. This isn't going with my head here, but I'm just going with momentum. I didn't think that they would get this far. They won the Shield, and now I have them to... they won the Shield, and they upset both Bay of Plenty and Wellington as underdogs. So Hawke's Bay, I think they're going to take home the Shield this season, and they're going to take home the trophy. And I'm going them head-to-head at $2.35.
Crazy. That's I'll get to my pick in a second. You've got Taranaki, $1.62 favorite, and Hawke's Bay, $2.35 underdogs, with the line sitting at +3.5. Yeah, I did take Taranaki 1-12 last week, and then did go down with Wellington, I believe, to cover the line.
I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, so a 1-2 in that department. These teams haven't actually played since 2021, so not much to go off against each other here. Taranaki winning that game 33-19. The last couple of weeks, I have been kind of saying the stock standard, this Hawke's Bay team is inconsistent but can explode and like turn games over. I'm going to drop that inconsistent label because at the moment they're running five games in a row and they've kind of looked pretty dangerous over those games and they've beaten the defending champions twice. So I'm sort of with you. Like, this team's here. This team's for real. Taranaki, they've been really good as well. They're riding a five-game win streak as well. And they're at home in this one. But I think Bay are in great form and I think they're going to take their momentum with them, beating Wellington and showing a little bit more promise on the offensive end. And then they're going to get another piece of hardware that they can do lines off and
allegedly. It's still unconfirmed what the powder source was.
Yeah, it's just come out today and they've said that they have confirmed how the shield broke. It was dropped on the ground and broke, so that thank you for that. And there's still no sort of definitive answer on what the white substance was. So I think what we can believe is pre-workout or it's been dust.
Yeah.
So,
hey, look, if there's one thing I'll say, I trust the independent investigation done by Hawke's Bay into their own team with interviews with the players about what happened to the shield and what that substance was on there.
There's don't question
no,
it.
No, exactly. If you've got a rug, sweep it under it, mate. Come on, let's move on.
Put it this way. If they win the comp, do we even care?
No. Well, I mean, there's going to be some old heads some that are upset. Will care. Yeah. I've got Hawke's Bay 1-12 at $3.40. I think they got this.
Yeah, I'm getting in there. Like, this Hawke's Bay team has some really awesome attacking pieces. I think Brad Weber does a lot for them at the base of the scrum and the ruck. It's going to be a tough battle. Taranaki, hometown, you know, the home crowd will be ruckus, bunch of farmers out there getting loud with the cowbells. But I think Hawke's Bay have the
Taranaki unit. Do the cowbells?
Well, I mean, the farmers, I'm assuming, yeah.
It's more of a Waikato thing.
Yeah,
it's
Waikato. Yeah, but they're Taranaki bulls. So. Yeah. I'm sure there will be a cowbell there. Put money on that. No, but I'm going to go 1-12 Hawke's Bay as well. Yeah. And we'll keep an eye on the social media Saturday evening.
Nice. I'm going to chuck a tinny one on Ollie to cross over as well.
Okay, oh, nice. Yeah, was that Payne?
That up with something. You got the odds there.
No, you can't get a try score yet.
Okay. Yeah, that's all right. We'll figure something out. I'll come back with it next week. So moving on to the Rugby World Cup. So our best bets for that one, I had Wales -4.5 at $1.87. I had the All Blacks head-to-head at $2. England -4.5 at $1.55. South Africa +7.5 at $1.40. I did have a little asterisk next to that one, and I said I did say that they'll win, but I wasn't going to put all my money on that one. Yeah. And I'm pissed off that I didn't, but we did fall short on the Malfi, which was a shame. But.
Yeah, I had a bit of a shocker, to be honest. I was 1-4. Wales -4.5 let me down. New Zealand, obviously, I picked against them. They let me
hit
down.
Hit that buzzer again just for one more time.
Hold it down. England, I got right. I said they'd beat Fiji 1-12. And then I actually took France to beat South Africa. So I dogged the Southern Hemisphere and 3 out of the 4 teams went through. So fuck.
Yeah, it's quite,
that'll teach me.
Yeah, it's quite funny. Nigel Owen, the ref, he like tweeted out before the quarterfinals started and he had Northern Hemisphere dominance. And every time one of the Northern Hemisphere teams went down, everyone was just piling on shit for him. So it is a bit of an omen, though. He's picked both the Southern Hemisphere teams to win their semis. So,
ooh, okay. Yeah, but
I did say as well on the way out of last week, how crazy would it be if all Southern Hemisphere teams won? And after the first two ticked off, I was thinking, oh, here we go.
Fiji got hard done by. I reckon they should have won. Some ref-face stuff happened at the end. I mean,
ref-face stuff's been happening throughout.
I mean, how good were the quarterfinals to go all the way to the wire in every game? I watched the highlights just before I came here just to refresh my memory.
Yeah.
And I still had tension watching the highlights. I was like, holy fuck. I didn't realize it was so late.
An 80-minute game felt like a half a day. I was just like sitting on the edge of my seat.
Bro, that All Blacks game, like, bro, you could feel, like, the tension through the screen, especially on that last, like, 38, I believe, phase play from Ireland.
Right. Yeah. I was, Oh, Simon, do you want to go over your best bets before I get into
it? Yeah, so I went down because I picked 23-13 for Wales and then got the margin wrong with the ABs. I thought 13-plus at 32-16 was my scoreline. Picked England. I picked England 24-12 and then I picked South Africa 18-12. So the wrong scorelines, but still close wins.
3-4.
Not bad. Before we get into the game itself, 28-24 win for the All Blacks against Ireland. I was looking at what the average phase play was in the modern game currently it was then. Yeah. I couldn't find the actual data around it.
Yeah, of course, it's rugby union.
Yeah. But that was crazy because I just wanted to try and figure out what we can compare that to because it wasn't only at the end of the game where we saw that phase play, it was at the very start. The very start,
yeah. We went massively in their territory.
Exactly. So for me, Sam Kane, I thought he played his best game in the black jersey to date. Adi Save, he was an absolute beast. Beauden Barrett, he had some fantastic touches throughout the game, especially with his boot. And we just really matched their physicality well, which is one thing that I was quite worried about in the close quarters. At the start, those long periods of phases from us really took it to them, and they didn't have that attacking flair to come back at us as well, which is something the Ireland really sort of were managing to get their momentum off. Bundiaki, he showed for me why he's the best 12 in the game at the moment, and I was a little bit surprised that they didn't start to try and go to him a little bit more and earlier on the edge just to get some momentum. Gibson Park, I thought he played really well as well. Interesting to see two ex-Kiwi players just standing out.
And bro, all the Kiwi. James Lowe had a fantastic game as well.
That
I think
boot was just
His boot was amazing. I saw him do like a few times where he would shoot out of the line and defend like a league structure where he would fly up and like try cut down our edges. Yeah. I thought that was really interesting because I just thought the whole way they played was fully like a league team, even from their face-to-face structure, instead of just like pods, like static pods that have someone running a headline and then have it multiple pods across. So.
Which is good to see because the All Blacks have always been a catalyst of playing a different style of play, and teams would sort of adapt, come there. South Africa, they'd always do their weird sort of shit on the side.
They play rugby.
Yeah. But it's good to see Ireland having this different sort of style and really taking it to us. And like you said, the defense is interesting because we're a team that gets a lot of our momentum from that edge play. So when you're taking that away, it becomes the kicking option for us, which is what we didn't go to ultimately. And we built phases and tired them out that way. For me, it was a really like pure match to watch. I know we were copping a little bit of shit, I think, from Kalen especially, saying that rugby's just a shit sport. But to
he's way too into his league.
To watch that game, it was a pure game in the fact that like you're just building phases, and sometimes it was just the pick and go to get momentum before something came apart. Richie Mwanga's class of touch off the back of the line out for that try that he set up with Will Jordan, absolutely spectacular. And like I said earlier, Beauden Barrett's little chip kick, which ultimately led to Fianga-Nuku's try. Those are the guys that are going to break open a game. They're going to be the guys that we're going to miss further down the track, but it's good to see those key players stepping up in the key moments. Yeah. I've already brought up Sam Kane, Adi Savia. They were instrumental.
Yeah.
Sam Kane on defense, super physical as well. I was really, really impressed.
You know what this was? This was an old school clutch All Blacks performance. The performance that we sort of hung our hat on for many, many years. Yeah. And the performance that have given the All Blacks this sort of reputation as a feared elite international team that it's had for so long. Like, and this was it.
They wanted it more.
Well, exactly. Well, they obviously did.
Yeah. I mean, to have 20 minutes with 14 men in like some of the most crucial positions, lose your halfback and your hooker around the middle, like quarter of the game in the middle.
Man. Yeah. Just to cut you off on that as well, as I saw an article from the game in regards to Richie Mwanga when he took over from Aaron Smith, and he wasn't sure what side to put the ball in on the scrum, he was saying. Oh. And this was in on our 5 meter line and cleared it perfectly. But it's
well
key positions, like you said.
But his pull when he was at halfback was good. Yeah. But you could tell that extra man on attack, Ireland, the way that they played their structure, was super hard for us to make up because we had it's like we prioritized defensive integrity and tight and then would give up meters on the edge and the team would jockey across to solidify the line instead of coming in and shutting out the attack. So it was really interesting and a bit frustrating when you first saw it because you thought that Ireland were making meters, but it was kind of clear after a while that we were prioritizing no gaps in the middle and just letting our defense come across.
Because we knew they weren't going to catch.
It also seemed like and that goes into my next point. It also seemed like we started adjusting and it got a little bit predictable. And from where they were making like early breaks in the first half, in the second half, especially late into that half, where they were only getting down there because of penalties and stuff like that, when they were trying to go face to face, they weren't breaking the line or they weren't making as much meters as they were in the first half. And that's from that 38 phase play. If you probably look back to where they started to where they ended, they probably made about 15, 20 meters in 38 phases. So credit to the All Blacks defense, man. That was clutch. Sam Whitelock, how poetic.
I know.
150-something games. He gets the clutch turnover.
Yeah.
He almost got the really dodgy penalty go against him, that one with the not rolling away. And they
held in it.
Yeah.
That was one thing. I think we talked about it. It was starting to really piss me off. And the fact that halfbacks, I get it. Like, they're just trying to hold people in there to gain that penalty, and it was just just keep it rolling. I thought the officiating throughout the match was really good. He let a lot of stuff go throughout it, and he was very clear, and you could hear it in his communication, and no, he's just there, no, he's being held, play the ball, which was really good, and it let the game flow.
Yeah, it did.
If the ball was available, even though there was a man on their side of the ruck, he told the halfback to play on instead of just blowing his whistle like he could have. The only thing that was unfortunate was one of the breaks that Ireland got down the short side, and he called the ball out, but it was on the opposite side of the ruck to where he was standing, and then when they played the replay, it was quite clear that it was still in the ruck.
And Andrew Porter picked it up. If we're talking clutch, Jordy Barrett's maul stop.
Try-saving.
God damn. Game-winning,
I meant to say. It was try-saving for sure, but incredible. Game-winning. Yeah.
If I could just talk for some about some boring shit as well, I thought, you know how we've been getting penalised about attacking the breakdown? We were actually super effective in that department. 7 turnovers. And then also against the line-out, which we have been pretty good all tournament, but to see it at this level against a really good line-out like Ireland, 8 from 8 and then 2 steals.
We've lost 1 line-out all tournament. Mm.
Damn.
Just on those line-out steals, the one thing I'd like to see is for the man who steals it, to if he can get 2 hands on it, which Frizzell did one time, and he threw it down when Aaron Smith wasn't right there, just take it down and truck forward. Mm. Like, the biggest thing about stealing a line-out is that you've got possession. Yeah. And I think we even did lose it because he threw it down to Aaron when he wasn't right there.
It so gives just you like backline time to adjust to what's coming.
Exactly.
Well.
So I don't think there's any harm in just taking it to ground, setting up a maul, or just trucking into the guys in front of you, set up a ruck phase, and then attack because you've got the ball.
Mm. I do feel a little bit sorry for Ireland. I'm not just saying that to cope about my pick, but I do feel sorry for Ireland because this is like the best opportunity they will have with the strongest core that's been together of their team, with the best talent they've had that I've ever seen them
and
have.
And peaking as well.
And with a great structure, and they're all connected, and they're not going to get a better opportunity than this, unfortunately. And it's kind of sad because they're going to be quarters for life, man. It's
a shame that it met, like we said earlier, than what we'd hoped it to meet. So it would have been interesting had the path been a little bit different if we had have met in the big dance.
Yeah, I mean, if we'd beaten France, top the pool, it would have been different. They would have probably gone through and made it all the way. And then we would have met.
A few turned down kicks as well. And I know it's a really positive intent to play, but it's the All Blacks, bro.
Yeah, that was spoken about a lot as well, and especially afterwards. The amount of times that they turned away points, especially towards the back end of the game as well, when you're 50 minutes into the match and you're realizing we've tried this a couple of times, our maul's not working, and you know, you've got to take those points on offer, which is what we did as well.
Yeah, finals footy. I mean, it was, and I think it was credit to Argentina. Like, they had a 12 to 9 point, 12 to something point lead at the beginning of the game against Wales because they just got 4 penalty kicks. Like, we talked about it last week, and I thought it was going to be the Northern Hemisphere teams to play that finals footy and prioritize the boot and going through the goals. But it was the Northern Hemisphere.
Feeling themselves,
bro. Teams.
Feeling themselves.
It changes how you're playing a game. You're having to now chase tries on top of now you've already been trying to get ahead with tries as well.
And just on a grander scheme of things within the tournament, you made up a good point, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and my dad's also made this point. South Africa and New Zealand just know how to play the tournament. That's why we've won the most out of any countries before. We build into these things. We don't put all our eggs in the basket straight away. And you can see that, man. We've just gotten better throughout the tournament. And lo and behold, we beat Ireland, the best team.
Exactly.
Yeah, I did see someone make the point that the teams who are doing well now have had a healthy rotation, whereas Ireland has been criticised for keeping a fairly consistent squad through the whole tournament.
And they played 6 against Romania.
Yeah,
France exactly. as well, which you saw obviously with DuPont's injury.
Yeah. But I mean, before we move on, the final thing I want to bring up, and it's gone against every bit of rugby I understand about winning a close game in the dying minutes when you've got the ball, and that's kicking it away and applying defensive pressure. Like, we did that a few times where we box kicked when it was like 4 or 5 minutes left. Like, we have the attacking capability to have 2 forward pods of 4 players and a couple backs and just go phase to phase to phase, eat up the clock and not make a mistake. But the game plan is, instead of worrying about conceding a penalty of sealing off or not releasing, is to kick it to them and then try and hold on to your defensive line and then try and get the penalty or force the attacking team to make a mistake. So it's like the complete opposite of what you learned growing up playing rugby, is to hold the pill in the last 5 minutes and just bash it until the clock
Crusaders footy. Yeah.
yeah. So I don't know when that happened or who made that call, and I don't know if I agree with it. I mean, I can understand having, you know, the ability to trust your defense.
When
you're yeah, absolutely.
Well, you got two payoffs though. Mm. South Africa did the same thing. They kicked it with 1 minute to go.
Exactly, Pfaff did it, and
France
had a break earlier when they came up the right side of it, and they got, I think it was like a good 50 meters. They made the break, and it was like as soon as I saw the turnover and Pfaff then kick it again, I was thinking, man, you're flirting with a little bit of danger here.
It just takes one break. Like, you know, you've only got one dude back there.
Mm.
Like, but to be fair, maybe the tactic is to kick it to them and make them beat us, because the way they were going face-to-face, even France a little bit, they were playing with some tight buttholes, bro. Mm. Like, they were not playing with the same structure they were playing throughout the game. So
that is the tactic, because that's what we do a few years ago when I was playing footy.
Yeah.
And you're looking to apply pressure elsewhere, and they've got to be the one to take chance their arm, and they're the ones that are going to make that simple mistake or not clear out, or they seal off a ruck and it's you're coming against it. It's easier to win a penalty as a defender as opposed to an attacker.
Someone's run the numbers, clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the All Blacks, they take on Argentina this Saturday at 8 a.m. So we've got a nice lineup this weekend of both Saturday and Sunday games, which I'm really enjoying.
Thank you. Thank the Lord. I mean, it was nice to have a slow start to the Monday morning. We're all watching the rugby at work on a Monday morning, but oh, man.
Too bad I'm going to have to watch recorded England versus Tonga before work.
So for me, I don't think people should take Argentina very lightly here in this one.
Agreed.
This is a pressure cooker we're in right now. It's not the Rugby Championship, or it's not some winter series sort of quirky little event. It's the Rugby World Cup, and this for them would be a massive moment in Argentina.
Agreed.
But again, I think we get this one done. These are situations where we know how to cope in these sort of things. Argentina was a bit, Ireland was a big monkey off our back. Nonetheless, it was a tough game, and hopefully we've recovered well coming into this one. But we know how Argentina play, and it's a similar style to that South African sort of footy, but not quite up to that same standard. And for me, we have that firepower to just unleash, and we've got the momentum and the confidence within the camp. You saw the amount of trash talking that was happening after the Ireland game, just in the way that the All Blacks are handling. And you don't see a lot of that, them sort of going like at their different opponents and stuff like that. And I just feel like this group right now is just a whole heap of adversities on them with the Fozzie situation, that you're coming into the World Cup and you're not hot shit. You lost the opening game to France. It's like they've got everything
to prove. A family share bag of chips on their shoulder.
Exactly. So this is a dangerous All Black team, and I think it's going to be a very dangerous team in this one. I'm going to take the All Blacks again at 11-20 margin at $3.20. I like them to get a 13-plus sort of margin, but I don't like them blowing something way out of it, because, like I said, this is the World Cup and Argentina will fight to the death. Anytime try score, I really like Will Jordan here at $1.65, and I also like Cody Taylor if he's going to start here at $2. I think we're going to go to our mall quite early. Okay. Also, Will Jordan for two or more tries at $3. I think that's worth a look, and I'll be sort of including that with some sort of shorter spread before kickoff as well.
Yeah, so New Zealand are the big favourites, $1.06, and Argentina are the underdogs at $7, with the line sitting at plus 17.5, so it is a pretty hefty line.
Mm.
New Zealand did beat Argentina in July, 41-12, but Argentina do have two wins over us in the last World Cup cycle, which is two more wins in Wales and Scotland in the last 50 years, so shout out to them. If the team that showed up last week shows up for the All Blacks, they'll have no problem here, and they will win comfortably. But Argentina, like you said, don't have 0% chance, because they do play with emotion, they do lift with these games, and this is a World Cup that means a lot to these this country and these people. We saw what it did for them in the FIFA World Cup. So Argentina have a lot of pride, and this All Blacks team has proven more consistent than others in our past. Like, we beat South Africa, then we lose 35-7. We destroy Australia, then we go right down to the wire in the next game. So, you know, these things can happen with this All Blacks team, but we've been building nicely, man. I can't go against what I saw last week, what I saw against Italy, and go against this All Blacks team again.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn from my mistakes. I'm going to take New Zealand 13-plus at $1.42. I do agree. I don't see something crazy, but I'm just going to keep it safer with that 13-plus, because they do have the potential to break out and score a lot of points. So New Zealand 13-plus.
Nice. Did we get an exact scoreline from you?
No, I don't have one. Sorry, I'll go for something after you. I'll have a little think on it.
No.
Okay. All right. So yeah, watching the highlights of the Wales versus Argentina game, I think, well, where most of Wales' points came on was from inside runners and players running close to the ruck. Like Dan Bigger's try was a nice couple inside balls exploiting lazy ruck runners. Then the halfback just sold a huge dummy and went through himself clean. So that's an area where we can exploit really well. We've got a lot of great options in there, whether it's
Shannon Frizzell.
Yeah, Shannon Frizzell, our loose forwards, or if Talia's back, that's an area that he loves to just get busy and go through.
Yeah, was Leicester?
I don't know. Has it been named yet?
No, it hasn't.
It'll be tomorrow morning.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it's whether they believe in redemption or not, or if he's, you know, he's soiled goods of Talia's not playing again after his curfew breach. But
yeah, Leicester played good too.
So. He did. Yeah, he did indeed. So we'll see, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of rotation we do. I mean, there's play like, you know, Whitelock, Sam Kane, Sevier, maybe they deserve a bit of a rest. You could get Dolson in starting.
The halfback question's an interesting one because the yellow card worked in favours for us in that one because it gave Aaron Smith a 10-minute breather to then see off the rest of the game afterwards because he came back just after that halftime as well. So he just got a big extended break and he could play right through.
Yeah, and I do like what was said in an interview where I can't remember who was reporting on it, but they said that Aaron Smith said after that happened, that I think at halftime he said he wasn't going to let that define him.
Mm.
So he decided to come back on the field and make a point that he was going to prove that, you know, that.
Well, he went for another intercept as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think if we can get maybe McKenzie in there, we'll see what else we can do to shake up this attacking options. But I would like to see the All Blacks add a few more attacking options and be a bit more open with the way we play the ball on attack instead of just relying on kick pressure like we did against Ireland or just relentless phase play. In terms of the overall result, I do think we win comfortably. I'm picking an exact of 34-16, and yeah, that 11-20 at $3.20 is nice.
Nice. If I'm going to pick one on the score, I'm going to go 28-13. And as for the likes of DMAC and stuff, I do think they will be unleashed a little bit earlier. It was just the game, eh? It was just game of chess and no one wanted to pick something up and move it just yet. Yeah. Just let the time keep going.
I think the game management was good from the coach. I think in terms of the substitutions they made when they did, it was well played.
Yeah. I'll go 38-17.
Nice.
Yeah.
So South Africa, they take on England this Sunday morning at 8 a.m. Look, I'm going to go England here. The only team so far to not lose at the World Cup. They play a style of footy that counteracts the Springboks. And I know they had a brutal match last week again. The Springboks, but I really like them to sort of empty it out here on on the Springboks in this one. Springboks, that was a tough matchup against France for them.
Yeah.
I think they may have just sort of lost that little bit of momentum coming into it. Maybe played their game of the tournament in there because that's what they had to do to get over the top of it. And I just like the style of play that England play to counteract the Springboks here and the way that they manage the kicking game. They play a very boring and sort of, it doesn't let them flow and the likes of it. We saw them match up quite physically against Fiji, which are some big bodies as well, which they're going to see in this one. So I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say England continue on this one and they do get the job done.
Okay, you've got a really good underdog here because South Africa are the favourites, $1.16, and England are the 4.60 underdogs with the line sitting at +13.5. And I see what you're saying, but all the points you're making, I'm just thinking that's South Africa, but they do it better. South Africa last beat England 27-13 last December. They've also won the 2019 World Cup by beating England 30-10. So there may be some redemption on England's minds. But they are 4-1 against England in World Cups and 4-0 in do or die matches as England only beat them in pool play in 2003. So, like I said, South Africa is just England plus. They showed up against France and they also showed that they can have a bit more attacking flair and threat out wide. Chesson Colby is so fucking good, man. And he is so fast. And he showed up for them. And I was actually kind of scared by what I saw from South Africa, both physicality and on attack. So I would love for England to win for our sake.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't see it because England play a slow brand of rugby that can beat the lesser competition they've faced so far. But I think they'll get exposed by an elite team like the Springboks. I think South Africa will get this done. I've got 11-20 at $3.60. Close game. These two teams, it might not be the prettiest to watch, but some of South Africa's tries I think will be kind of nice. So I've got to say they win this 11-20.
Nice. So you speak on Chesson Colby. When was the last time you saw a player charge down a conversion like that?
I know.
Bro,
when was the last time you saw a winger take a a drop kick from the back of a ruck.
Yeah. The good and the bad.
Yeah.
But that was crucial.
Yeah, they won by a point. Yeah. They won them the game. Yeah.
Craziness.
Yeah, fantastic. The other thing I'll bring up is how crazy, out of three of the four quarterfinals, there was a player get penalised, a player involved and reviewed for a intentional knockdown. So you had Aaron Smith get yellow carded. You had Owen Farrell get penalised but not binned. Didn't allow Fiji to have a one-man advantage in the last few minutes of the game. And then you had Eden Ebsabeth right on the try line.
That was
lunge,
a try as well.
Lunge out and get full contact with the ball, stopping the pass, and no call at all. I mean, I don't know if I disagree with it, because the ruling is that the motion needs to be upward and the ball needs to travel backwards, which it did. So technically they got the call right. But three different scenarios and three different outcomes that all had a huge impact on how the game. I mean, Ebsabeth got binned anyway eventually, but
so I guess street justice got served.
Yeah, the card knows.
Yeah. Never go against a card. Yeah, I thought Ben O'Keefe in that game was like, he went into that game with the refereeing mindset of, I'm going to let it be a little bit loose. I'm not going to swallow my whistle. I'm going to let these guys play. But he did it for like knock-ons and like sketchy 50-50 stuff. And I was kind of like, no, you got to call those. Like, some of those are knock-ons and penalties. Like, you can't just not call those. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But for this game coming up, I do tend to agree with you, JT, that South Africa have a similar game plan, but just do it better. And in terms of the physicality, I do think South Africa have the edge. Just looking at the way that South Africa are running the ball at a very physical themselves French defense, I don't think they're going to get the same response that France gave them. I think England are going to give up a few more meters at the gain line. I think they're going to get a bit more of a roll on, which, like you said, with their backs attack in South Africa, it's going to make it a lot more easier for them to exploit out wide and get England scrambling on defense. So I'm going to pick that South Africa get this one done. Not a huge margin though, 27-19 on the nose, but $3 for 1-12.
1-12.
Yeah, good odds.
I feel like there's going to be a few cards in this one as well.
Ooh, that's not a bad call.
That's not a bad call. Yeah. You can't bet on it, though.
Over under?
I'd say three. Over 2.5.
Ooh,
yeah. That's a good line. I'll take it.
That's on the South African side of it. For me, my best bet's in this one. I'm going to take England head-to-head here at $4.80. I'm also going to jump on the spread in this one as well. So I've got a little multi of the All Blacks at 11-20 at $3.20, combined with England plus 13.5 at $1.87. And all multied up in that one, that's $5.82 as well. So moving on to the NFL. So TAB featured bet, if you've been following along with us, this is something we've been working on with the TAB at the moment. We're still waiting for some data to be collected and make a final decision on what's going. So we're still cruising along, so keep jumping on. This week, the Los Angeles Chargers, they take on the Kansas City Chiefs. Whenever Justin Herbert takes on Pat Mahomes, he brings his cannon with him. We're predicting that he throws over 250 passing yards in this one. Cooper Kupp, he's had an unreal season so far since returning for the Rams. They come up against the Steelers this weekend, and we think he'll crack the 100 yards again in this one. And the 49ers, they take on the Vikings in prime time. Brock Purdy, he struggled a little bit last week, but we think he will get this one done. He's got a young guns around him, and Brandon Ayuk, we're expecting he's going to get a touchdown here. So keep an eye out on the option under the boosted section on the TAB app and jump on for us. So let's ride. As for players that impressed us, player performance that impressed us, for me, I talked about him just before, Cooper Kupp from the LA Rams. He's only just come back from a hamstring injury, which is something that he's struggled with in his career, and it's not holding him back at the moment. In the 26-9 win over the Rams for the Rams over the Cardinals, he tallied up 148 yards off 7 receptions and a touchdown to go along with it. 148 yards off 7 receptions.
That's crazy.
Absolutely.
20 yards a reception.
Stupid. Cooper Kupp, he is back. And for me, in a competitive NFC West, I think they're really going to make a little bit of a run here as well, the Rams.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty high on the Rams as well. You got Puka there as well. And then Kyren Williams actually showed out in this game as well. So the Rams are actually kind of real. And
shout out to Brad on Kyren Williams as well.
Yeah.
I have been saying he's not that name, but that guy is for real.
Oh, I said that too. I said, who? Why are you trying to trade Kyren Williams for all these guys? But no, he's a real player, man. And yeah, the Rams are going to be dangerous. The player that impressed me was Raheem Mostert from the Dolphins. And I've already covered Devon Achan and Tyreek Hill, who I could have covered again because he played outstanding as well. But it's my turn to cover Raheem Mostert because he had another outstanding game in the Dolphins' 42-21 victory over the Panthers. 34.2 fantasy points, 132 total yards, three touchdowns. He's got great awareness of defenders and great footwork. Like, he knows how to make them miss. Mm. And you could see that by his 49-yard run, just beating everybody and, like, making a whole bunch of defenders miss. And then also his athleticism when he jumped over that guy and then fully hurdled him. The bunnies are crazy. And he's had a great season, as well as just having a great game in this one. He's already on pace to best his best season ever with 429 yards through six games, which would see him end up with over 1,200 yards if he maintains this pace, which his previous best was 891 last season. So
that's crazy.
Raheem Mostert, man, he's I'm not going to say he's back, but he's kind of exploding.
Especially with HN being out for a couple of weeks as well. He's going to see a lot more touches. So, Simon, you and me have got some homework, because I think we need to find one of those little half and half jerseys for Jordan, and we need to get half a San Francisco 49ers side and half a Miami side, because that's all he's talking about at the moment. Maybe some Cowboys undies and his pants in it, but
some Dak Daks.
No, I don't want Cowboys anything.
Team performance that impressed us. The Detroit Lions, it's popping off in Detroit. It might not be the Pistons for your scheme, but the Lions are going off. They are now 5-1 this season. The Chiefs, the Dolphins, the 49ers, and the Eagles. Who would have thought that the Detroit Lions would be right up there with them? Against Tampa Bay and away from home, Jared Goff had 353 passing yards, two touchdowns, and no interceptions to go along with it. Amon-Ra St. Brown, he has been Mr. Consistent this season. He finished in this one with one touchdown, 124 yards of 12 receptions. Hutchinson, he continues to be a problem on this defense for teams.
Dog.
And like I said last week, it's just so balanced, and the backfield's just crazy as well. The fan base, they were pumping too. This was an away game, and they stayed right till the end. Tampa Bay fans had cleared out, but that Detroit wall was there cheering their fans on. So if there's a team or a hostile place to go and play in, it's going to be Detroit. I saw a while ago, it was a player came out, I can't remember who it was, and said just wear the blue ski mask all cut out. And there was like a whole section. You think about the Spider-Man with the Warriors, you think about that on steroids over in Detroit right now. It's crazy. And this team is going to make some waves.
Yeah, and it's an exciting team as well. That Dan Campbell's got an exciting play calling for his squad. And yeah, man, it's good to see them doing so good, even with like a beat up running back position at the moment. Like both Gibbs and Montgomery, I think, are dealing with some injuries. So, man, it's exciting in Detroit. The team that impressed me was the Cleveland Browns. And I put the absolute curse on the 49ers last week when I said they were going to go undefeated, because they immediately turned around and lost 19-17 to the Browns. And that's Brock Purdy's first loss of his career as a starter, I think. So
regular season.
To be fair, they did have Debo and CMC pick up some injuries in that game, and they did shank a game-winning kick, his second easy miss of the game.
They turned the magnets on.
Yeah, they must have, bro, just to spite me, because I've had a shocking week of picks.
Scheme curse.
Yeah.
It's all to do with this island juju.
Is it?
You've cursed yourself, man.
Yeah, I think it is. It's all good. How dare he be unfaithful to his own country? Let's just make his other picks go absolutely haywire. Or I'm just a shit picker and I'm making some excuses. I'll have to believe the other one. Browns, got to give credit to their defense, man, because Brad was right. This is the best defensive team in the league at the moment. Only giving up 1,002 yards through five games. So only 200 yards per game, which is number one in the league. No surprise with stats like that. And held the 49ers to under 30 for the first time this season, and even held them under 20, which is fucking kind of crazy considering the offense that they've been putting up. They have some monsters with like African names up front that I can't quite pronounce, but they've been monsters for them. And Myles Garrett, who is relatively quiet stats-wise in this game, but has been a physical freak all year. And, you know, he was moving Trent Williams. I saw a TikTok of him like just throwing Trent Williams, who is an elite guard, just to the side and like running through. And I thought, fuck, man, that is a physical phenom. Cleveland Browns defense is so legit. But respect to the offense, because Amari Cooper showed up. He played amazing. 108 yards, a ridiculous overhead catch over two defenders. That was outstanding. Kareem Hunt and Jerome Ford had great rushing games in the absence of Nick Chubb. And PJ Walker was shaky, but he was actually pretty good. Like, they don't have Deshaun Watson at the moment. He did throw some picks, but he did the job and made some big plays, which got them over the line. So this defense is so good that it's going to keep them in games. And if their offense can come along for the ride, they'll do some more upsets throughout the season.
That's crazy. One thing that did happen in that round is CJ Stroud finally threw his first interception as well. So we've gone a long time, and I love jumping in the comment sections after all of this.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys just saying, just please don't let him on the massage table. So, yeah. Watson's having a good season in Cleveland at the moment. But yeah, that's what happened with the Texans.
Is there any other juju you guys haven't cursed?
No, I think I pretty much cursed them all last week.
Oh, yeah. I was doing all right.
Oh, I did pick All Black 13 plus this week, so let's hope that it doesn't carry over.
We're all right. We've got 11 to 20, so we've got a 2-point lead.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
Game we want to feature in the upcoming round. I'm going the Los Angeles Chargers up against the Kansas City Chiefs. Whenever these two teams meet, it's just absolute fireworks. It's two young quarterbacks that just love to sling the ball. In their last matchup, Mahomes threw three touchdowns along with over 300 yards. Herbert threw two with over 300 yards as well. The game before that, Justin Herbert, he threw three touchdowns with over 300 yards, while Mahomes threw two touchdowns while just under 300 yards. So these guys just have a cannon to go, especially when they see each other on the other side of the field. Both games were super tight in this one. And those two affairs, they were only separated by 3 points in either game. I'm expecting big things again from the QB position in this one. Look for Kelce to run up really big numbers again in this, and Herbert just to light it up with Keenan Allen. So keep an eye out on that. Definitely watch the highlights because I can highly recommend it's going to be a banger.
Yeah, take the overs as well. They'll probably set it really high, but it still might hit because these are two teams that are super exciting, division rivals. There's always exciting games that come down to the wire and a bit of beef amongst all of it. So Chiefs versus Chargers, that's a good one. I'm actually going Dolphins at the Eagles. Sea versus Sky, Speed versus Scrum. The Dolphins are traveling to Philly, and it's a battle of the 2-5-1 teams. And this is a good game to gauge where both of these teams are at after a pretty easy schedule to start the season. The Dolphins, you know, they lost to that game to the Bills by quite a bit, but this is where they want to see where they stack up, if they can rebound from that with the top of the division. Because Eagles, although they lost last week, they're still, you know, the NFC reigning champions. Yeah, so the Eagles will also want to see if they're still the big dogs because they've got a young, hungry team that are coming for them. And the Jets kind of, you know, gave them their first loss and made them feel not invincible anymore. So this has got a bit of stakes as to where these two teams will go. Probably end up being at the top of their conferences after the game, being both 5-1. And, you know, both teams air it out. Both teams run effectively. So it should be a pretty entertaining game up in Philadelphia.
I like it. If you're an Eagles fan as well, Julio Jones has just signed with them for the rest of the year. So that's exciting that they're going to pair A.J. Brown back up with his former Tennessee Titans teammate as well. So that locker room's going to get a whole lot more fun too. So that's going to be dangerous because you just add more depth.
Yeah.
Power rankings. Last week, I had the 49ers, the Eagles, the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Lions. My list is the exact same, but I've flipped the Dolphins into third and I've dropped the Buffalo Bills down one because Josh Allen plays at the exact same level as whatever team he is playing against. If he's playing a shit team, he plays like shit.
Yeah.
If he's playing a gun team, he's right there competing. Yeah. And that is the only thing that worries me about the Bills throughout the season. They're going to have these games that they just somehow lose and they're going to have these games where they just completely dominate and it's going to be like a 52-48 kind of score.
So in your power rankings, the Bills could be both 3 or 30, depending on who they versus.
They could be 1 or 5. So yeah, that's where I'm sitting this week.
And I'm with you, bro, because my top 5 power rankings is the exact same. There has just been a bit of shuffling. The Philadelphia Eagles have actually dropped 2 spots after that loss to the Jets. I've got them at number 5. Number 4 are the Miami Dolphins. They got a good win, but it was against the Panthers, so I can't make them jump the Bills yet because although they played terrible, they did win, and they still hold that win over the Dolphins, which I still value pretty highly. The Kansas City Chiefs are in second, but they're not as Mount Everest gap away from the 49ers, who did lose to the Browns. I've come back down to earth with my opinion of them. They are a beatable team. They're still very good. They're still number one. But the 49ers are not as invincible as I was trying to portray last week. So that's my top 5 power ranking this week.
So yeah, obviously both undefeated teams in the NFL lost last week. We had the 49ers go down to the Browns and the Eagles, they lost their first ever game in franchise history to the Jets. And I know it's been a joke around here, but I've seen signs start popping up now and it is Zach Hampson out in New York. So it's going
to
be
I'm not liking all this him additions now that they're starting to reach with like the use of it.
Yeah, exactly.
I do have a, just because my power rankings were pretty boring, I did have a bottom 5 power rankings if you wanted to hear it.
Yeah.
Tell me if you agree or not. I've got number 1, the Carolina Panthers. Yeah. Well, so 32.
Agreed. You said the 49ers were going to go unbeaten this season. They don't look like they're going
to
win again.
Oh, they could go the other way. Number 2, I've got the New England Patriots. Number three, I have the Denver Broncos. Number four, I have the Arizona Cardinals. And number five, I have the New York Giants. Yeah. Does that sound about right?
They all suck. I'd maybe have the Denver Broncos. I know this is a wild take, but I'd maybe have them a little bit higher. They haven't been, like, Russell Wilson's been having a...
Higher as in lower or...
Higher as in, like, a bit higher on the list than there. I'd have
like
them,
worse?
No. Less.
Oh,
less,
okay.
Yeah, Russell Wilson, he sucks, but the numbers aren't that bad. It's just not clicking over there. But I
made it confusing by like counting 1 to 5.
Yeah, and then going back.
I should have gone 32, 31. Through, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
Too much math for us anyway.
Carolina hankers, put it that way.
It's not lads talking math, it's lads talking footy.
touchdown parlays. Last week I went all in on the tight ends. We folded on that one. The odds on that were, I think it was at 1870. This week, though, I'm going Bijan Robinson up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tyreek Hill up against the Eagles. I think he's going to see this as a challenge. He's just made it known that he's going to absolutely kill the receiving yards record this season. And what comes with running that far, you're going to find the end zone. Brandon Ayuk, I'm jumping on that one again against the Vikings.
Okay, so last week I actually hit with Tyreek Hill, but I missed on Isaiah Pacheco and Gabe Davis. This week, I'm going back to the Chiefs. I'm going Travis Kelce. He scored 3 touchdowns in 6 games and has gone touchdown, miss in his last 4 games. So, you know, if he's going to keep the pattern, he should get a touchdown in this one. Kenneth Walker from the Seahawks. He scored 5 touchdowns in 5 games and he'll be hungry as the Seahawks bounce back off a bye against a struggling Cardinals. So I could see him getting to the end zone.
I was going to jump on that as well.
And then Stephon Diggs. Gabe Davis let me down this week, so I'm going to go with his partner, Stephon Diggs, because they do play a pretty woeful Patriots team. So I'll back the other guy.
Yeah, I like that. And he didn't let you down. I let you down. He was Mr. Consistent. So maybe because you jumped on it with that bad juju, that's where we went there. UFC 294. We gave you a little teaser last week. This week it's here. It's coming. Jordan, take us away, mate.
Yeah, we will get to that in a second, but we'll just briefly touch on UFC Fight Night Vegas, where Edson Barboza did defeat Sadiq Youssef by unanimous decision, in which we both got right with the pick, and we were both super close to the perfect pick.
I know.
And you were super close to the ultimate god pick by saying head kick KO in round 3. So shout out to that. But unfortunately, we just get the head-to-head. It started off Youssef coming out hot, landing big boxing combinations and having Edson Barboza rocked all over the show. Had him really hurt, and it should have been a 10-8 round. I know most of the judges gave it, but your boy Chris Lee didn't want to give a 10-8, gave it a 10-9, which it didn't end up affecting the score in the end, but still, it's wild to see him still getting this sort of, these level of mistakes at this level of competition in the UFC.
Being obviously the only one to see it wrong. Like, it's not like there's a couple judges that have the same mistake as him. It's him on an island being wrong.
Well, you get Sal D'Amato is kind of like, he groups into it sometimes as well. He has some shockers. But Chris Lee, man, what are you doing? But as the pace slowed down throughout the fight, Barboza did start warming into it. And he was especially effective with the body shots. And then in round 3, he just exploded with that spinning wheel kick. Timeless, man. He is so athletic for such an old guy to land that move. And he was this close to having him finished as well. But he jumped for a sub. Like, he should have just kept going for the ground and pound, and it would have been a highlight. Spinning wheel kick KO. Probably one of the only guys to have multiple of those on his record in the UFC. Yeah. So he got very close to making history, but unfortunately he didn't. But he still closed out rounds 4 and 5 by maintaining the body work. And then even taking him down in round 5 to put the cherry on top. So I did have him winning, I believe, 3-2, but with maybe even 4-1, with round 2 being a swing round.
I had the exact same thing.
So, I agree with the judge's decision, except for Chris Lee obviously not giving a 10-8. But what were your thoughts on the fight?
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. The first round was incredibly scary. I thought, oh no, it's like Sadiq Youssef's just going to make this veteran and potential Hall of Famer and just fan favorite, like, we just were bigging up his record last week. He's just going to make him look silly and expose him in the first round. But credit to the fucking mana of Barboza, bro, to get pupped all the way around the first round and to survive somehow. Like, he got on the bike in crucial moments, got the space, just managed to eat some really flush shots, got to the end of the round, and it was almost like, it was like, oh, well, that's it. My turn to fight now. He's, and it was like, he just ramped up the gas every round. You could see Youssef had really tried to empty it early, and he was compromised and from the gas tank.
He did slow.
But it was the rips to the body, I think, which made it a lot harder. I mean, some of those teeps, some of the kicks to the liver side. And also, his punch combos were lighting up the body too as well. Like, a lot of times he got in close, good knees, couple hooks to the body were just making it hard for Yusuf to keep the pace going. So, yeah, I mean, the game plan was fantastic, and it almost unfolded exactly how we called it. But, yeah, if he hadn't jumped sub, and if he hadn't slipped, and if he'd managed to just put him on the ground and get some ground and pound going, it would have been stopped.
Yeah, he would have got him out of there. He was hurt.
He was so hurt, bro. He was doing the chicken dance, which we love to see. But, yeah, absolute gamesmanship to get the decision win, because I guess he figured he wasn't going to get one of those opportunities to knock him out like that again.
Nah, and credit to Yusuf, because he did slow down, but he was still in the fight, and it was still relatively competitive. But Barboza, man, he's one of my all-time favorite fighters, man. Because to be 37 years old, 29 fights into your career, and to be under that much adversity in round one, 29 fights, you know how much money you've probably made, especially with the way he's fighting? Yeah. He fights with all the bonuses and stuff you get.
Yeah.
He's probably chilling, bro. He does not need to, like, keep fighting and taking that damage. I wouldn't have blamed him if he was just like, fuck it, Leon.
Yeah.
But no, man, credit to this guy, bro. He is a dog. He kept fighting. If I could go through some of the stats, it was actually 178 significant strikes to 164 to Yusuf. So Yusuf actually landed more significant strikes, but 42-13 to Yusuf in round one. So that's massive. Where the majority of your strikes came from. I think Edson Barboza did outland him for the majority of the rest of the time. Three takedowns to two as well for Barboza. So actually led the grappling exchanges, which is credit to him because he's not known for that. And this is the big one. 89 body strikes for Barboza. Before it got recounted, it was actually over 100. So
really?
Crazy stats, man. Imagine taking that 100 times into your body.
Yeah, and you see, I mean, to think about it, you think, oh yeah, I mean, it can't be too many more than what happens in a standard fight. But you see those social media videos of people like, oh yeah, I'll just take a rip from someone in the body, and they just get one shot and they're crumpled on the floor.
Yeah.
And these guys are taking 89.
Crazy.
Like, at full competition strength, not as just someone just having a laugh in the gym.
Yeah,
not fatigued just like, as well.
Yeah.
Not waiting for it to come in.
Yeah. Craziness. So, yeah, it was a war, so they're both going to need some time off. A guy who got injured recently but is looking to probably return sometime next year, because he done his ACL, I believe, last year against Josh Emmett, and that's Calvin Kattar. I think Edson Barboza versus Calvin Kattar would be a really entertaining fight.
Wow.
A boxing style versus, you know, a more kickboxing, kick-heavy style of Edson Barboza. Both dogs, both tough as fuck. That should be a good one. If he's not ready to come back, I think Josh Emmett is a good one as well. Another boxing approach with power that could put Edson's lights off at any time, and Edson can do the same to him. So entertaining there. Do you see anything different for Edson amongst those rankings?
Yeah, because he's fought a couple of them already, right?
Yeah,
like, you can't look too far forward. Like, I mean, Emmett's had a loss. He hasn't fought since he lost to Yair, right?
No, he got absolutely obliterated by Taporia. So
he's probably still
chilling as well, because that was a life-changing amount of damage.
Yeah, absolutely life-altering. I think Kattar's the right name. Because he's fought Giga Chikadze, hasn't he?
Yeah. Chikadze got him.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, unless he's keen for the rematch to square the ledger. Movsar Evliov, he's got a fight already, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got a fight booked against Arnold Allen.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah. I think Kattar is a fantastic style matchup.
For the fans as well.
Yeah, oh, absolutely, yeah, because you've got Kattar with the mongrel of, you know, that rivals Dan Hooker, I'd say, even.
Yeah.
He'd
tough as fuck.
Yeah, I think he'd have a similar result.
Yeah,
probably.
Like a fight of the night candidate.
Yeah, but the way that Dan got beat down and crumpled to the body attacks against Barboza, I'd probably see a similar outcome.
Could happen. I mean, it is a lot older Barboza than what fought Hooker, but I'll never write this man out. He's that good. In terms of Yusuf, I've got him fighting Lerone Murphy. I think that's just, you know, someone a bit down the rankings that he needs to give a chance now that he's coming off a loss. And Lerone's pretty good, so I wouldn't mind him getting a jump, potentially.
Yeah. Was it Dan Eger that won that fight just recently?
No, he lost. He lost. Sorry. Pretty close decision against Bryce Mitchell.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. Maybe because they're both losers. I don't know Lerone Murphy that well, so I don't know.
English prospect.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Yeah. No qualms.
Anyway, we go to UFC 294 in Abu Dhabi, the big one, like Sam was saying before. Man, this card is still super stacked, but it's kind of top heavy now. It used to be stacked all the way through, but just like the main fights, the rest of the card has kind of fallen to pieces. And
oh, I haven't checked. Is it?
Yeah, it's still good fighters. Yeah. Like, you'll still watch the whole thing and enjoy it because there's a lot of good prospects on there.
Yeah. But am I getting up at 3 a.m. for the early prelims?
Oh, that's right. It's in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Am I pushing through from after celebrating?
You might have to do that.
I'm going to watch the All Blacks celebrate the semi-final win at 8 in the morning and just push.
Yeah, well, that's a big push, bro. You're talking like multiple days push. You might need some Hawke's Bay confidence. Anyway, the first fight we're going to cover, light heavyweight, number 2, Magomed Ankalaev, $1.27 favorite, taking on number 7, Johnny Walker, $3.60 underdog. Ankalaev riding a 10-fight undefeated streak but coming off a controversial split draw to Blachowicz for the vacant light heavyweight title last December. Well-rounded Dagestani, good and powerful kickboxer that obviously has a very strong wrestling base. While Johnny Walker, once an exciting prospect, back on track with a 3-fight win streak, a monster for the division at 6'6", and not skinny, like he is a big man. He has toned it down recently, opting to be a little bit more technical since being at SBG Ireland with John Kavanagh, which is McGregor's coach. But he is a super powerful and dangerous striker that can still do wild knockouts if given the opportunity. Not a grappler, but he's so big and strong that he usually avoids any takedown attempts, but also has a very suspicious chin, has some of the wildest comedy knockouts happen to him in UFC history. But big, strong guy. Good fight. Who are you taking?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very weird matchup in terms of styles and personalities. If you remember the Blachowicz-Ankalaev match, Blachowicz blasted this man so bad in the legs he couldn't stand up, but still managed to get takedowns and win rounds enough to square the ledger and get away with a draw, which was a really disappointing result in that fight. And I thought Blachowicz did enough to win, but I mean, you can't damage somebody that badly and lose to takedowns.
I was the other way because I thought Magomed won the first round. So I was the other way. I thought it could have gone. It was a draw, I don't complain about it because it was close and a bit of a dud. I thought Magomed won that.
Yeah, so I mean, it'll be interesting to see whether Walker, like he's with the strength, can have the takedown defense to stop the fight getting to where Ankalaev knows for certain he's got the edge, which is ground control and damage on the ground. But yeah, I would say Johnny Walker has the edge on the feet if he can keep the distance, be more reserved. Like he has against Anthony Smith, he did well to just kind of get through that fight with a win. I think that's what I would describe that fight against Anthony Smith. I would say Johnny Walker has the edge in terms of stopping the fight before it goes the distance. But it's a weird one, man. It's only 3 rounds, so it's hard to pick. But I've got here on my in my notes here that I'm pretty sure that Ankalaev is going to get away with the decision. $3.20 they're paying on Bet365. But yeah, if Walker invests in the same strategy as Blachowicz, I think he's got more of the attacking flair to actually push the pace and get the finish that Blachowicz missed.
Okay, yeah, I see your points, but I ultimately agree with you. I think Ankalaev is going to get away with the decision victory here. He is the more technical striker. But he also has the wrestling to fall back on. And like we've seen in his Blachowicz fight and then against like guys like Thiago Santos, he is willing to engage in the striking and he is very capable and he's got good techniques and can land good strikes. But he does revert to plan B when it does start getting a little dicey. He got dropped by Santos, reverted to plan B, won the fight by just grappling against the cage and wrestling. He was getting his leg chewed up by Blachowicz, referred to plan B and got himself a draw. I think he has the more tools here. And he has the willingness to grapple if necessary, if Johnny Walker does put him in danger with a big strike. So I think I have to go with an Ankalaev decision here. And I've got him winning all 3 rounds for a 30-27 decision.
Nice. Yeah. If you are a punter and you do like throwing your money at outside chances, Johnny Walker could KO him. Like that is a...
Yeah, it's not a wash. He's a good underdog.
Yeah. So if you are looking for something just to... I wouldn't put in a multi, but if you're looking for something just to chuck tenner and get... I would say it's probably going to pay about 70 to 100 bucks. Just chuck it on a KO.
Yeah, well, we've got a big one coming up now. Hamzat Chimaev, representing Sweden, but originally from Chechnya. $1.35 favorite, taking on Kamaru Usman, $3.10 underdog from Nigeria. The Nigerian nightmare, but fighting out of USA.
I was just going to say, Hamzat represents Dubai now, United Emirates.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, he's given up the Swedish flag.
Good looks. Good looks. So this is obviously a short notice replacement. We touched on it last week. It was meant to be Paulo Costa, but obviously Kamaru Usman has stepped in on 10 days notice, fighting up from his natural welterweight to take on Khamzat Chimaev. Chimaev, who was undefeated at 12-0, 11 finishes, 8 in the first round, an insanely aggressive grappler, high-level grappler, who always comes out hot, looking for takedowns and working to a finish. Good striker too, with the ability to work off both stances with great fight-ending power, insanely good chin, and still maintained a relatively good pace in his fight with Burns, because that was an all-out war and they were both going for it, and he was still there in the third round, like, willing to engage. Mm. So he's obviously got a good gas tank, and this is a three-rounder, so look out for that. Usman is the former middleweight champion, and you got to say he is a legend of the sport.
Yeah, one of the most dominant.
Yeah, one of the most dominant.
Welterweight champion, sorry.
5 defenses, a former college wrestler whose takedown defense is, get this, an insane 97%, and has only officially been taken down by the champ, Leon Edwards. So there was a moment in the Colby Covington-Usman fight too where he, like, his knees did touch the ground, and DC was going, oh, that's a takedown, that's a takedown. Yeah. But no, apparently, according to the records, still only the one takedown. He's rounded out his game nicely, though, because he is a wrestler. But since joining Trevor Whitman at Team Elevation, which I think he has now since moved back to Killcliff with, like, Gilbert Burns and all those boys. But he did, for a long point of his time, was at Team Elevation with Trevor Whitman. And has become a serviceable striker with good straight shots and crazy knockout power for someone who just usually employs straight shots. Like, he does throw hooks when your guard is high and he tries to get around it. But for the most part, it's straight shots down the pipe. Mm. And he has shown he can KO people. That Masvidal KO put his lights out. Gilbert Burns put his lights out too. And he's got an unbelievable gas tank and a great chin. So, I mean, this fight, we've said it last week, is probably better than the original that was booked. And a fantastic contest. Sam, I'll start with you. Who do you see getting this one?
I feel like this is just going to be some out of the actual blue. The result of it, I got no idea how it's going to come. I'm going to lean towards Chimaev in this one. Like you said, the takedown defense from Usman, which is why I see Chimaev is just going to do some weird, crazy thing right at the start of the fight. I expect him to maybe run in and go for, like, a little flashy takedown or something and just bring out, whether it's a kick or something like that, he's just going to do something crazy. If Usman can weather that a little bit and take control of their fight with the experience that he has, going up a division, like we said last week, it could be an interesting script that's been about to be written. And the fact that if he wins this, he moves on to Strickland as well.
And avenges the bro. Yeah.
Exactly. This is why I'm sitting here with a little less confidence and saying that I'm going with Chimaev. But I'm going to say Chimaev gets this one down, and it's going to be by knockout.
Yeah, okay.
Nice.
Do you agree?
No, I don't. But just quickly, check out, this is Costa's elbow. That's what it looks like now. Yeah, so he's got the surgery and the big staph infection hole. So yeah, I'm not gonna look at that. So what I'm showing everybody here is a photo from Costa's Twitter. If you go there and look at it, or on Instagram, he's probably here as well. He's got a nice little scar on his elbow and a huge hole from the staph infection. Yeah. So a
little boo boo.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely something that you cannot
Photoshop.
But a Halloween makeup artist.
Oh, he picked a scab, did he?
This one's gonna be crazy. I think because Usman's been bulking, he's going to be a big lad. And, you know, naturally he walks around at almost light heavyweight, right?
He's way bigger than a natural welterweight.
Yeah. So I think at middleweight, he's going to be really comfortable. He's going to not have to cut as much. I think the power's going to be there. The gas tank, which is always quite good, might be a little bit more better. But Chimaev's a guy with a fantastic gas tank as well. So we'll see. We'll see how this goes. 3 rounds as well. So I think Khamzat's going to, you know, not have to worry about going at a championship pace. And like you said, Sammy, will come out incredibly fast, a la Kevin Holland. So I think we'll see something like that. But if Usman can get this takedown stuffs, I think he outclasses him on the feet. I think that he gets the better of the striking exchanges. But what I do think is the persistence of Khamzat's takedowns will allow him to threaten a few submission chances, and that's where I think this one's going to go. I'm picking a Khamzat sub at $4.33.
Okay. And I was going to say after his takeaway that Usman's decision was very live, but I thought that was where you were going to go with your breakdown, but you've ultimately come to similar places that me and Sam have come to. I am also going with knockout. Firstly, the intangibles for Usman. Short notice, natural welterweight. I know he's big, but he's got skinny legs and he is a little bit, you know, shorter than Khamzat and shorter than most middleweights probably. And he is 7 years older at 36 and has those creaky knees. So, you know, just those factors don't give me a lot of hope. What I see from this fight is very similar to you, Sammy. I see him shooting, Chimaev that is, shooting takedowns, shooting blast double legs, but getting them stuffed then having to compete on the feet where it turns into a bit of a war with, I'm going to think Kamaru Usman is going to be landing the better straight shots down the pipe, and it's going to be like tagging Chimaev, and Chimaev's going to be going, yeah, gum. Yeah, you know how he does with the two hands? And you're going to have DC on commentary going, oh, this is crazy. That was nasty. and yeah, I think it's going to be a bit of a war, but then Usman tends to do something where he dips his head sometimes when he's trying to throw his hooks. And where I see him getting caught is some craziness that you were alluding to. Mm. And I'm going to pick that as a shovel uppercut that hurts Usman really badly.
He has floored that random guy before he got into the UFC.
He's
the
not
exact
a random
same
guy.
Oh.
Islam and Ikram Aliskarov.
Who's fighting on the same card. Yeah,
and he's
a
really good prospect. So that's honestly, to this day, this might be a hot take, that's Chimaev's best win.
Yeah,
including UFC. Ikram Aliskarov's a dog, bro. Mm. But yeah, shovel uppercut. Got him with it. I can see Usman going down flat on his ass and then getting followed up with some ground and pound that gets him the TKO victory in round one, no less.
I've got round one.
So Chimaev by TKO, $3.40, and in round one is $6. So
as much as he's annoying, I do love the antics and the heat that he brings with it. It's like right before your main event, you're going to get a blast of an entree. And it's just going to be some fireworks.
Yeah, I like him, mate. I like his just aggression, I guess, even on the mic. Like, I kill everybody.
Yeah. And they're trying to talk to him about weight cuts. And they're, I don't care. Yeah. Bring them in.
I don't give a fuck. I don't fuck. I just kill these guys. Yeah, he's crack up. But now we get to the main event. This is the big one. Lightweight championship. Islam Makhachev, $1.40 favorite from Russia or Dagestan. This is the featherweight champion, number two in the pound for pound, but really the people's number one, Alexander Volkanovski from Australia, $2.85 underdog. A rematch from their fight in January in Perth, but this one being taken by Volkanovski on short notice, like we alluded to last week, taking over from Charles Oliveira, who unfortunately got a cut over his eye. And it just got a lot more exciting in my eyes because this is a huge matchup as well. Makhachev, 12-fight win streak. Absolutely insane. He's number three, I think, in the pound for pound. So huge pound for pound stakes in this one. Dominant grappler, relentless top control, and deadly submission game. Insanely strong for the division as well. And he's also a great striker, man, because he's got great defense. He used to have the highest striking defense in the division history until that last fight and pretty much until round five against Volk, where Volk landed probably like 30, 40 shots unguarded. So, man, he has got a good striking base. And he's a great counter-striker with good head kicks ability as well. So, man, don't sleep on that aspect of Islam's game. But Volkanovski, man, the Don. Mm. Undefeated at featherweight with 13 wins. Only loss in UFC was to Makhachev the first time. Insanely high-level striker. Elite feinting. Elite striking IQ and shot selection. Great leg kicks. Good power in his shots. But has all-round skills with great defensive wrestling shown in the last fight against Makhachev. And then great offensive wrestling shown against Yair. And great jiu-jitsu defense. He's just perfect, man. Mm. He's just all-rounded. Like, the most complete fighter in the UFC. Showed great jiu-jitsu defense against Ortega. And he's one of the fittest in the UFC, too, with an unbreakable will. But he's got a huge task ahead of him. So, do you believe in fairy tales? Do you reckon he'll get this done?
I do believe in fairy tales. Makhachev is... he's just fought... his last fight was against Volkanovski.
Yes, it was.
Correct me if I'm wrong. So, there's a lot of talk in Volk... He hasn't been prepared for this fight and he's being thrown into it. Makhachev will have thought that he wasn't going to be fighting Volk again for quite a lot of time. So he also hasn't been preparing for what's about to come. And Volk's going to come in there and he's going to learn his lessons and he's going to have to go in there and he's going to have to win this fight. I'm going to pick that Volkanovski gets this with a round two knockout.
Ooh, early days. Yeah. Gets him out of there early. Just before we get into your pick, Simon... The last time they did fight, it was a unanimous decision for Makhachev, in which most of the judges have him winning 3-2. Do you agree with that decision?
I'm not angry with the decision, but I do disagree. I think that it should have been 3-2 in favor of Volkanovski. I think the disputed round was round four that most people
had. Was the round where Makhachev had his back, but Volk was landing shots from behind. Yeah. Which... I'm going to be honest, I'm a huge Volk fan, but I had it 3-2 to Makhachev.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, like I said,
just
I mean...
Just because that's a dominant position, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it is a dominant position because you can threaten the submissions and you can also land more damaging shots than someone trying to punch over their shoulder, which Volk was doing. Yeah. So, yeah, I understand the ruling there. But in terms of the damage output, which the UFC prioritizes over positioning, I feel like the damage output outweighed the time spent in that position with the fact that Makhachev didn't really threaten much of a of the it's submission. A,
yeah, very subjective round. Yeah. One of the most subjective rounds you'll see in an MMA fight.
Mm. Yeah. But in terms of my prediction, there can be miracles when you believe.
That's not, you wanted to flex that. That wasn't bad. That actually wasn't bad.
But I'm telling you, miracles do happen. And just like the All Blacks with the chips on their shoulder and the cards stacked against them, this is Volk's time to shine. I believe that this is the man that rises to the occasion, loves to be counted out. And I just think this situation is just going to allow him to approach it with a bit of freedom. You know, there was a lot of build up, a lot of pressure put on him, even though he seemed quite calm and collected on the build up the last time they fight. But I think just going into enemy territory, like the most enemy territory he could ever on short notice, you know, with poor preparation, I just think it's a situation where he goes, you know what? Nobody is expecting me to do anything, but I'm expecting myself to do great. So let's go out there and do it. So that's what I'm picking. I think it's still going to be close, but my end result is a round three TKO to Alexander the Great Volkanovski, submitting himself as the greatest UFC fighter of all time. So round three TKO gives you $26. All the TKO heads up is $6.50. So get your money around the Volk.
We've got two TKOs here. That is crazy. So I'll just go through some intangibles for Volkanovski that kind of work against him in this one. Short notice fight, like Kamaru Usman. Natural featherweight, so going up as well. And he was training for Topuria, so it is, you know, he hasn't put that size on.
No, he had. Do you know what he was walking around at?
Yeah, I heard it was 180.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
like,
yeah. They're saying he's at 180. He's
got, do you reckon that's like, because he apparently he's had an arm surgery as well, so do you reckon that's a chilling 180 or that's like a fucking muscly 180?
Oh, no, he's been chilling.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
like,
what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But still, like, he's not in the position of trying.
Like, if he cut down all of his fat, he's probably still a natural 145er.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm kind of saying, because Makhachev's a big guy, so it is actually important to, like, hold some muscle. I'm not going to say he's going to be, like, completely outstrength, but it's just another factor. And then also, there is a little bit more leniency with the rehydration rules in Abu Dhabi than there is in Australia. It's a 24-hour window instead of... Oh, it's a 36-hour window, sorry, instead of 24 hours. And they are allowed to use an IV, I'm pretty sure, so...
Here we go.
I can't wait for the Dan Hooker tweets. Hey?
Yeah, Makhachev is going to be a little bigger, I think. And then, obviously, like you said, huge Islamic hometown presence in Abu Dhabi, and it's pretty close to his home in Russia. Look, I'm doing it again. I'm picking Makhachev. I can see Volk approaching this a little too overconfidently and, you know, how good he did last time. And he's even been saying, like, could have done more to this. But I think he's going to engage and be more willing to engage in some dangerous grappling situations. I reckon he's going to be doing good. I reckon he's going to actually survive a couple of those situations in the early rounds and actually be up, say, like 2-1 going into the fourth and actually be winning a lot of the exchanges on the feet because, man, I never get over how good he is in the striking department, leg kicks, punching combos, all that stuff. So talented. So I say he's going to be up in the fourth, but I can just see a situation where he kind of gets his back taken again, and then I'm going, oh, shit, that's dangerous. Oh, no, what? And it's locked in. I'm going, no. And then he does like the tap out. He just does the one, like, he understands he's out. So, see, I can't even say that, bro.
Yeah.
Turns me to even say that, but I think he's going to get subbed there, and I think it's going to be by rear naked choke. I would love for him to win. Obviously, I'd love for him to win, but I think the smart money here is on Makhachev by sub, which is at $3.50. And if you combo that with round four, it's at $19. So there is a bit of money to be made there. But yeah, it's a hill too far for Volk in this one. Yeah. I'm sorry, but I'd love for him to get it.
Nah,
wow. Yeah. You know me. I don't bet on like fucking intangible shit like that, emotional shit.
Yeah. But I mean, it is important to consider.
It is a factor for sure.
Yeah, no, but I mean, what I was going to say is that in the last fight, there was, you know, more moments than I wanted to remember of Volkanovski engaging and Islam just hitting with like one or two clean shots that just buckled his legs.
Yeah.
There was a lot of times where Islam didn't engage to follow up, but he dropped them like quite clean where Volkanovski like went to his knees or hit the canvas and got straight back up. Or, you know, there was some moments where Islam showed that he could counter strike and drop him or really sting him. So yeah, it's going to be a tough ask for him to close the distance. The leg kicks were a big problem for Volk last round. So,
yeah, basically, these guys are both so fucking good. Like, they're the best of the best. There's a reason they're number two and number three in the pound for pound. It's just that one guy is smaller and stacked deck against himself. Not against himself. He took an opportunity and he jumped on it. But
it's the facts.
It's the facts. It's the tough ask, and I have a hard time seeing him getting this one done. But if he does, well, the curse is real. I'll have to come in here and renounce my Volk fanship.
I'll have a little fuzzy Russian hat for you to wear.
Yeah, that's good, actually, if you can find it.
Oh, well, that's another one in the books for us. So enjoy the absolute belter of that UFC card that we've got. Kiwis game, if you're at Eden Park, go hard on it. All Blacks taking on Argentina in the semifinals. We thought sport was slowing down, but it just got even better. So we'll see you guys all next week to review. Jump on the boosted odds as well. Anyway, enjoy it. Peace.
See you.